Welcome, Sherry Castle. I'm so glad that you came because I've worked with you for years at the farmer's market, and I am just so happy that you have your book. Hold it up.
The book.
Beautiful. The book. I love the cover.
Thank you. Took this picture on my front porch.
Oh, did you really?
All the photography was done at my house because we discovered it was much easier to bring photographers to a kitchen than to try to go to a studio that didn't have a kitchen.
Right. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Wow.
And you have been working on this book for a long time, I know.
Well, it seemed like a long time. I actually had a year to turn in the manuscript, but then it takes more than a year for the production to go on, you know, for the actual building of the book and getting it printed. And it
Well, and probably years of accumulating recipes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sort of. Well, I mean, I've cooked forever. So in some ways, this is the culmination of decades of work, but I had a year to get it on paper. So it was kind of a hurry up and, you know, overnight success that took 50 years.
Right.
Did you pitch the book to the publisher?
It actually came, it's something I had been mulling around for a very long time, but I was having lunch with the woman that ultimately became my editor on this about a completely unrelated thing. And she just said, you know, over lunch, so if you were to ever write a book, what would it be about? And I was like, blah, 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 blah. And I didn't even know I had it.
Oh, wow.
Or, you know, but it just came right out.
You were ready.
And I was ready. And less than 90 days later, I had a contract to do it.
And it's UNC Press
it
that
is
printed
UNC
it,
Press.
Right? Boy,
exactly.
They did a beautiful,
beautiful.
Job.
Lovely job. Yeah, this was the first book they had done with color photography.
Really?
Yeah, but from what I understand, it's not going to be the last.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's a huge book. Most cookbooks have around 100 recipes. This one has close to 350.
Wow.
What was I thinking?
Really?
Yeah.
You were eating and shopping and cooking. And
exactly.
I love the thing that you did at the farmer's market. I don't know if it was last year or a couple years ago where you went and shopped. And then you took the stuff that you bought at market and went up to the gazebo and made stuff with it.
Spontaneously cooked. Yes, a couple of times I shopped and brought it back. And a couple of times someone shopped for me and brought me a mystery basket and said, okay, do something. And
That's a great idea.
It is a great idea. And one of those things actually wound up in the book. It was, they had brought me peaches and basil and some other things. And I made a
peaches and basil. That's
an odd combo.
But it's sounds great.
And it actually is. And I made a sweet basil syrup.
Oh.
And you put the peaches and blackberries in it and serve it over a toasted cornmeal pound cake.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought to combine those two ingredients.
I think that's one of the things that I know I enjoy doing, I think I'm pretty good at, is taking the things we're familiar with and recombining them in unfamiliar ways.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say I kind of skirt that line between creative but not too weird.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's pictures in there. Let's see some pictures.
There are some pictures, and they're in sections. They don't necessarily line up with the thing that they're across from.
Okay.
For printing costs, I learned a lot about all of this. They print them in signatures like this. So there's four sections of pictures. And this is one of my favorite things to eat in the book. This is a roasted Roma tomato tart.
Wonderful.
It's so interesting. One of the many things we learned about photography that I learned, even though I had done some food photography in the past, is things change when they're on paper. Even if they look gorgeous and perfect and magnificent and irresistible on your MacBook Pro, when they get on paper, it changes.
Right.
And also when you know so completely what it is, it's hard to see alternative theories on what it is. So this one, which reads nothing but roasted tomato to me, various people said, is it strawberries, roasted peppers? One person said, is that raw beef?
I thought roasted peppers when I first saw it.
So you never want to put something on the cover of a book where it's not pretty clear what it is.
Raw beef. Yeah, let's have a pie of raw beef.
Right, exactly.
Yum.
But, you know, there's the pictures.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
This is a chicken and squash thing. This is a roasted fingerling potato salad with a red pepper vinaigrette.
Mm.
This is a nod to the hillbilly food I grew up with and also a nod to the time I spent in Italy. And this is nothing but good old soup beans, pinto beans, and some skillet wilted greens en crostini with a smoked tomato soup. And it goes on like that. There's a total of 24 pictures, and I could discard three. We could only discard three.
Oh, wow.
And
wow. What a hard choice.
It was a very hard choice. But yet, one of them we discarded because it clashed with the others. We changed linens and stuff in it, and it just flat out clashed. It was a beautiful photograph if it had been by itself. And then there was another one that, again, all of us involved knew it was a blueberry parfait. Never considered it would look like anything other than blueberries. And when the proofs came back, somebody said, "What's with the fish eggs?" Fish eggs? And sure enough, somebody thought that the little blueberries were fish eggs.
Wow.
And so we had to pitch that one out. So, you know, there were some things like that. But we had a very small team. We had a wonderful photographer named Stuart Waller, who lives in Durham. And then I had a wildly devoted girlfriend who used to be a professional prop stylist that helped me, you know, assemble dishes and everything. Mm. And that was the team. You know, instead of the cast of thousands you usually get, it was the three of us for six long, intense days. That's like crazy
that was
schedule.
My question was, how long did it take?
Which is about half of what a normal shoot would be. Most times in a professional food photography shoot, if you get two, maybe three shots in a 12-hour day, you're just a rock star.
It's a
very different kind of thing.
Well, and usually they bring in their own designers and everything, because I know I sit on a committee with Mama Dip. And she would come in and say, "Well, you know, Food Network came today and invaded my house," you know, because they really do. They changed things. So at your house, I bet everything was pretty much...
Well, it wound up, if you notice, the house doesn't show. It just wound up being the food, so it didn't really matter, and we could bring in the lights and everything. But I was in a food magazine, an article about me about 5 years ago, and I thought I had everything we needed, and they shipped 14 crates of props and then went shopping when they got here. I mean, the house was full of crates of the most gorgeous stuff, and they wound up using maybe 5% of it. But, you know, people that do that, that's a skill set I admire. I can make food look good on a plate, but people that can really be an art director for a project, what a skill set that is.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, it sort of speaks to you and your expertise, though, that you can make a plate look beautiful, you know?
It is different, because sometimes you overcook or undercook things. In the days of everything being fake, we're really past that. You know, like in the 70s when there was no real food on it, and the milk in the bowl of cereal was Elmer's glue and stuff. They don't do that anymore. But you do have to find, you know, food doesn't look the same through the eye of a camera as it looks through our eyes.
Exactly.
It's a very different thing, and that's why it goes so slow, is things wilt and fade and melt, and you know.
Well, you usually eat them right away.
Exactly, and you're looking at it differently. I did a thing for TV one time where we were roasting chickens, and I had to buy, I think it was 15 or 16 chickens that weighed within a tenth of an ounce of one another.
So they'd all look alike.
Because you couldn't cut to commercial and come back and your chicken have doubled in size for no apparent reason, you know. But I love that sort of thing, and know just enough to know I don't know much at all.
Right. So what's some of your favorite recipes from the book?
One of my very favorites is a thing called stirred corn, and is what some Southerners would call fried corn, because we don't fry everything that says fried. Fried used to mean anything cooked in a skillet, whether it was a dab of fat or a lot, it was called fried. But anyway, it's incredibly fresh corn on the cob that you cut off the cobs and scrape that wonderful, juicy, sweet starch. And cook it slowly, almost like making risotto.
No bacon?
No bacon in this one.
That's how I make fried corn, with bacon and peppers.
And there's nothing wrong with bacon. Exactly.
Oh, God, it's so good.
But anyway, you stir it until it's the most delicious, thick, creamed corn of your life. And then I turn it into an entree by putting seared sea scallops on top within a lime beurre blanc.
Good.
So I love that. I really love, I've got a soup in the zucchini chapter.
Now, can I ask you what you sear the scallop, how you sear the
I pat them dry. If you want something to sear, you have to make sure there's no moisture. So if it's a piece of beef or a pork chop or chicken or anything, you always want to pat the moisture off so it'll sear rather than steam. And I plunk them down in a crazy hot cast iron skillet until they're brown, flip them brown the other side, and pull them off.
With no oil or anything?
No, just no, not at all. Just really, you know, a little salt and pepper. And if you've got good sea scallops, you know, they'll stay almost just on the other side of raw in the center. You want them barely opaque, but that beautiful brown sear on either side. And it's there's nothing better than something that's done, something that simple done very well.
Right.
I think that's the highest form of food.
Yeah, by overcooking it, you can really ruin them.
But, you know, I'll take a great pound cake over a dessert that took a week to make. You know, I think that simple, straightforward food is, there's nothing to hide behind. It's either good or it's not.
Right.
No. Yeah. So. Wow. Where were you trained? How did you start this journey?
I started this journey. I wrote my first recipe when I was 4 years old.
Oh.
And I mailed it to a television cooking show.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm absolutely serious.
What was it?
It was for what we would now call a smoothie, but it was an orange juice, fresh fruit concoction I put in my grandmother's new blender. She got a blender with S&H green stamps. Remember when people used to
have stamps? Oh, yeah. We got stuff all the time with
them. And she got a blender from the green stamp store, and I put a bunch of stuff in it. And there used to be homekeeping shows that came on television during the day. This one happened to have been out of Charlotte. It was the Betty Feaser show. And I mailed my recipe to Betty Feaser. And so I guess in some ways I've done this forever.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. But I was trained as a journalist. I was trained as a professional writer, but I was always the friend who cooked, catered my own senior banquet in high school, did the family cooking, was the friend everybody's house, you know, wanted to come to my house because I made real food. But I didn't get brave enough or foolish enough, depending on how you look at it, to turn pro until probably about 1997.
Really?
And, yeah, so until about 97. And I have had some professional training, but I don't have a complete chef's degree by any means. I talked the CIA into letting me take cooking courses without doing their whole program because I had a baby at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I took another short program at a cooking school in San Francisco called Tante Marie. But mainly, I don't consider myself a chef because they have skills I don't have, but I do believe I'm a very technically solid cook who has a particular ability to explain it to people.
Right.
And, you know, there are lots of people that could cook me under the table, but I can really explain things in ways I think makes food and cooking more enjoyable for folks.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's so cool. And you seem to have found your real niche, you know?
Yeah, it is. You know, this
so you've been working with the farmer's market almost
forever.
From the beginning then,
almost
right?
From the beginning, because even when we still lived in Wake County, I drove over, put my little baby in her car seat, and drove over every Wednesday and Saturday to buy food. Because back then, there were so few local options.
Right.
And matter of fact, one of the main reasons we moved back over here was to not have to drive 30 miles to the farmer's market. You know,
right.
And now, of course, you know, there's good markets in more places, and more options, but you know,
well, our market here is so much better than most markets. They're very stringent. They've got rules that you have to prove that you're growing the mm-hmm. stuff, and it has to be within 50 miles. So,
and all of those good things, you know, it really is a benchmark and sort of a, you know, a guiding principle for other markets now. Plus, it's the center of my social circle. I mean, just like you, when I go, I'm there to get food, but I'm mainly there to see some of my best friends in the world and
exactly.
chat with folks. And you know, I've got this whole world that revolves around that market.
That's what I was telling Val just a little while ago, that it's that everybody there, they're such great people.
Yes.
You know, and they care about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's much more than just a farmer selling vegetables to
right.
random people. You develop these relationships with the folks
now
there.
One thing that we didn't cover, it's a southern garden. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Watauga County near Boone, so I'm from way back up in the hills.
Yeah.
But I came down off the mountain, so to speak, in the late 70s to go to Carolina, and have lived somewhere in the Triangle, mostly Chapel Hill, ever since. But I love my mountain heritage.
Mm.
I turned my back on it, thought I was way too good for it, like so many of us mm-hmm. did on the place we grew up from. And it really wasn't until I started traveling to Italy and studying Mediterranean cooking and found a deep, deep, soulful connection between Mediterranean food and the food I grew up as a traditional mountain southerner, that I got a newfound respect, and it was a real epiphany. It changed mm. everything in my life, and here we are. But I talk about that quite a bit in the book, how I got my groove back on being a southerner and loving this food and seeing that, you know, it has cultural import, it can be delicious, it's simple, it's very agrarian at its heart, mm-hmm. and that's the way I cook. You know, it really is come through that way.
Now, we need to know where to get the book because we're down to 30 seconds.
Holy smokes, I do talk about it. It is, I'm happy to say, for sale everywhere. It's a nationwide release, but I encourage people that like local food to go to local bookstores like Flyleaf. Flyleaf has been so good to me, but it's available most everywhere that sells books.
Great. And the name again?
The New Southern Garden Cookbook
by Sherry Castle.
You bet.
Oh, it's so great to have you,
Thank
Sherry.
Thank you. This
yes,
has been fun.
It is great.
Good luck.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
And good luck.
And you're doing a book signing tomorrow at Durham Farmers Market,
I am,
right? Okay,
from 8 to
great.
Noon.
Thanks
mm-hmm.
so much.
Thank you.